so delighted today to welcome Tara Beth Leach as our guest on Conversing. Tara Beth is a pastor, a preacher, and a writer. She speaks widely at conferences and retreats around the country on women in ministry, church leadership, and the call to be a radiant witness. She's currently the senior pastor at Good Shepherd Church in Naperville, Illinois, after having served at Christ Church Oakbrook and also at First Church of the Nazarene of Pasadena, sometimes known as PASNAZ. She's a graduate of Olivet Nazarene University and of Northern Theological Seminary. She's also written some books, which I want to commend. Emboldened is the title of one, Radiant Church, and 40 Days on Being a Six, which is a reference to being an Enneagram Six, I do believe. She has two wonderful sons and has been married to Jeff for many years. Tara Beth, welcome. It is so great to have you on Conversing today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I just have to say that from the time that we met, which was during the early years of the time that you were at PASNAZ, I was very aware of how much joy and delight and radiance that you've written about you yourself represent. And at the same time, as I followed and we've followed together the story of the challenges of ministry, I've been aware that you don't come by that without suffering and pain and everything else mixed into all of that. And a lot of it has turned around this, the thing that I want us to focus on in our conversation today, which is about the challenges of women in leadership. I should say before we jump in that as a pastor in the PCUSA denomination, which has ordained women for decades, and as the president of Fuller, which is an institution that, again, for decades has supported women in leadership in all levels of leadership, it's really important and urgent, even still, after all these decades, to continue to acknowledge the challenges that women in leadership often face in churches that have been slower or have had a harder time or have actually rejected the role and impact of women in leadership as pastors and preaching leaders. So I come to this topic not pretending any sort of neutrality. I'm all in on women in leadership. And yet I know that there's both giftedness for that and challenges to that. So you've done so much reflection about it. It's why having you as a guest today is such a delightful gift. So you have just begun in the last couple of months a wholly new position as the senior pastor of Good Shepherd Church in Naperville. How's it going? Let's just start with the very beginning of where you are right now.
Yeah, well, right now I'm sitting in my office in Naperville at a church where I began working as a youth leader many, many years ago, a church that sent me to seminary, a church where my children were baptized, a church where I had my babies and started raising them here. And when we were called out years ago, we never, ever imagined that we would be coming back. And so today, this is May 2023, I am overwhelmed with gratitude, with the joy in this place, with the Holy Spirit momentum and energy that we are experiencing, and it is a thrill that I get to do this again.
Wow, what an amazing thing. I've done a similar thing myself, so I understand that journey of being formed deeply earlier in my life and then getting the privilege of being able to return to a church, which in my case was First Press Berkeley. Tell us about the early formation when you were first there and where the church is now as you step in as its senior pastor.
Yeah, so this was the church that I returned to ministry after a season of thinking that I didn't want to be in ministry any longer. I had been in youth ministry for several years, and I also was a competitive horse rider and horse trainer. And so I went through a season where I was going, I was going to leave ministry and I was going to train horses and continue on in that industry. But I remember being out training and riding. I was riding north of 9 horses a day. And in many ways, you know, chasing the dream of a horse girl. And I'd be out there in the field with the horse, and all I could think about was preaching. All I could think about was returning to the pulpit. And so my husband and I were living in the western suburbs of Chicago, and I started to just look around. I thought, I wonder what's out there. And I came across an online posting back in 2008 of a church called Good Shepherd, and they were looking for a high school youth minister. And I thought, I wonder what that is. And I sent off my resume, but you know, I sent off my resume to probably 9 other churches. I ended up interviewing at several. And when I came to Good Shepherd to visit, my husband and I did one of those secret incognito visits. And it was the energy in this place that captivated us. Good Shepherd has always been a place that is marked by joy and is known for their joy. We were immediately welcomed. The pastors came and, you know, gave us such a warm welcome. And I remember standing at the time, they were launching a new contemporary service in their gymnasium. And Jeff and I standing down there and just being so just captivated by the spirit of worship and praise and joy. I remember thinking, this is a place where I want to serve. And so ended up interviewing and signed on to become their new high school youth minister. And the lead pastor at the time, several months later, he came and was peeking around the corner and watching me do a message to the students. And he said, we should have you preach on a Sunday morning. And I was terrified at that idea and also so excited, because this would have been the biggest church I'd ever preached in. And I remember thinking, I was in my early 20s thinking, oh no, I'll surely screw it up. Like, there's just no way that I can preach in front of all these people. I was used to preaching in front of high school students and not adults.
Right.
But he began to speak words of encouragement to me and came alongside of me. And so I ended up preaching my very first sermon in August after only being here for a few months. And the pastors at the time, I mean, came alongside of me, and they kept giving me more opportunities to preach. And they kept coming alongside of me and mentoring me and encouraging me and telling me that they believe in me and telling me that they see gifts in me. And I remember being just so overwhelmed. And the church was embracing it. The church was embracing me. And then they sent me to seminary. The pastor really just began to speak life into me, that he believed that I had a long journey of flourishing in ministry. I remember one time he said to me, and again, I'm in my 20s, he said, one of these days, I'm going to be sitting in my rocking chair on my porch with Idalyn, his wife, and he said, and I'm going to be saying to her, remember when we knew Tara Beth? But that just paints a picture of how these pastors just lifted me up and threw open the doors and sat me at the table and emboldened me. I write about these pastors in the book, Emboldened, in fact, and how this church was a greenhouse for me. I call this church a greenhouse all the time, of like a young tree. They nurtured me, and they watched me. I made so many mistakes in the pulpit. Mark, I got to tell you one mistake I made in the pulpit here. One of my first times standing up before the people, in my mind, I was thinking, oh my goodness, I love this church so much. And I was thinking, this is my church. I love this church. And so I was doing the call to worship, and I was wanting to say, it's so good to be together as the body of Christ and how much I love my church. But for some reason, it all came out and I said, good morning, Good Shepherd Church. It's so good to come together and worship my body.
There's a line to remember.
Yes, and they've called me back to be their lead. It's a wonder. I mean, the amount of blunders as a 20-something that I had in the pulpits here at this church, and the crazy things that you know, that I did, and yet they loved me through it, and they watched me grow, and they sent me to seminary. They invested in me, and I've always had gratitude for this place because of that, but I never ever dreamed that I would be returning here now in this role.
Yeah, it's an amazing story. Chair Beth, how long ago was that when that first experience at Good Shepherd happened?
Oh, 16 years ago.
16 years
16
ago.
Or 16 or 17 years now.
Yeah. So now you're in a very different zone in your life. You've had all kinds of experiences. You come back and the church is similar and or different. Do you have any ways you want to describe the church and how it's developed over the last 16 years?
Yeah, this is a church that had two co-lead pastors here for a couple decades that eventually retired. They called another lead pastor. That lead pastor did resign after a couple of years. And so that took the church through a season of wilderness, a lot of pain, a lot of desert experiences, which I believe was incredibly formative for them. And I don't know if they would have been ready for me had they not gone through that.
Uh-huh.
You know, just like all of us, and just like we see in the Israelites, it's in the wilderness spaces that God forms us and shapes us. Because this was a church that always just kind of had this upward momentum of growth and flourishing and energy. And then for them to be in the wilderness like that was incredibly painful for them. And so when I started coming into contact with them last year, my heart was grieving for them, for all the pain that they were going through. They were without a pastor, and they had gone through some turmoil with some unfortunate events also happening within the staff, and it was creating a lot of disorientation. And I would say that the staff and the congregation was feeling disoriented. So when I came to them, I was filling the pulpit for them a couple of times as a guest preacher. And one of the things that stood out to me was they were, even with all of the pain, it reminded me of the community of the Beatitudes. Where they were still experiencing the blessings of God, even in the pain. And I don't mean like blessings in a metric sort of way, like a measurable metric, but a more that they were still like trusting and clinging to Jesus, even as the floodwaters were rising, and even as the rains were coming down, and even as they were wandering in the wilderness, these were a people that still continued to faithfully cling to Jesus and trust that God would get them through the wilderness. And it really, what stood out to me was, it really was, you could feel it when I would come into this place and in worship and the singing. I mean, a few times I would just stop and I wouldn't sing and I would just hear them singing. I mean, this was a community that was singing from a place of longing and expectation and desperation. And when I came in May, they immediately reached out to me and said, "Hey, would you consider being our lead pastor? Would you consider candidating, interviewing for that?" And I thought about it for a moment. I prayed about it, but then my answer was no. And my answer was no because I didn't know if I was ready to be a lead pastor again. You know, Mark, I have been doing a lot of healing and reflecting over the last 2.5 years. Wondering if some of these larger churches can really welcome a female lead pastor without it being too controversial. And I committed to myself that I would never lead a church again if there was any hint of controversy, not just for my own soul, but for other women that were watching and also for the church. I don't want to be a trailblazer for the sake of being a trailblazer and rip a church apart as a result. And so I was really, really cautious. And also, oh, go ahead.
Just Good Shepherd had never had a female senior pastor. Is that right?
Good Shepherd had never had a female senior pastor. That's right.
Had it had female associate pastors?
Years ago.
So really it had just been a male staff of pastors, essentially.
Yes, yes. Strong female presence, lots of female preachers, just not ordained clergy. So there were women preaching, I mean, a couple times a month in the pulpit here for the last decade and a half.
Got it. So that's very significant.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I, you know, I didn't want to do this if it was just going to be trailblazing, you know, because for me, like, that's not what I'm out to do. I'm out to pastor and to shepherd a people. And I think that it's really, really important that churches are ready. If they're going to welcome a female lead, they need to be ready, because I don't want to make this about, like, conversations about gender. I just want a pastor. I just want a pastor. Right. So, and also, like, that compounding with, like, the hard times that they'd been through, I just didn't know if I wanted to do that. So I said no.
Yes.
And I have been on a season of healing and reflecting. I've been going to therapy for the last 2.5 years. I've been, you know, seeing a spiritual director. I have been doing a lot of resting and discerning. And so, you know, months go by and they call me again and I say, you know, I don't think so. But then I came back and I preached in December. And when I preached here in December, I remember just at one point looking out at the congregation and again, still seeing the community of Beatitudes, where these were people still clinging to Jesus. And I looked out at them and just felt such a strong impression in my heart. Like, just, I thought to myself, they need a mom. They need a mom. You know, and I say that because I am a pastor who also happens to be a mom, a mother. Now, I don't think all women should be moms or ought to view pastoring through the lens of mothering. But because I am a mom, I do. It's really hard for me to not conflate the two at times, where pastoring and mothering feels so, it's so similar to me. It's so similar to me. And I remember just thinking, they need a mama. And then I thought, could that be me? Are they ready? Are they ready for me? And so that then led me to just a series of conversations and conversations with mentors. And I was always so surprised by how the conversations went when I started talking to people, including my lead pastor at Christ Church, Dan Meyer. I was always so surprised that whenever I would talk to people, I thought that they would say, no, don't do it. You're in such a good place. Like, don't consider it. And every time I talked to someone, it was the opposite. It was as though they were trying to convince me to consider it. You know, they would say things, you at least need to look under the hood, or you at least need to go into the forest and see what's behind the trees, or it doesn't hurt to just look into this. And I remember thinking, what in the world? Like, there's just so much consistency here. And I had been, I remember there's a friend sent me a song called A Sound Mind by Melissa Hessler. And I listened to the song and just wept and thought, okay, I at least need to go into the forest and see what's behind the trees. And in December, I think it was about December 23rd, I said, okay, guys, I reached out to the search committee and said, all right, let's have a conversation about having a conversation. Let's look into this. And boy, it felt like after that, I slipped and fell on top of a speedboat, and that speedboat left the shore, and it went so fast because after 7 interviews with the search committee, they then, you know, presented my name to the council, which then they presented my name in February to the church, which then in end of February, the church voted, and 98.9% vote of affirmation, which,
oh my gosh,
to me just, wow, that's when I realized, no, they really are ready. And I remember years ago, a female mentor of mine said that most women will get an 80% vote of affirmation, and that's good. and that you need to go in with an 80% vote of affirmation and be grateful, by golly, because that is wonderful. Like, and so I always believed in my mind that that's just what I'm going to have to face, that, you know, 20% of the church is just not going to be on board, that a lot of people are going to leave in the beginning, but, you know, you just got to get through that early phase. And that was the narrative in the tape that I kept playing in my mind. And everything that I have been telling myself and believing over the last decade about women lead pastors and what I would have to experience has been rewritten. There's a new story being written. And not only have people not left, but it's been the opposite. People are coming.
Great. Great.
And we're experiencing flourishing. And people are rallying and they're excited. And God is really doing a new and beautiful thing.
So, Terabeth, does that mean then being the first woman senior pastor almost takes off the table from your point of view, the being a woman part? Not that you're going to not be a woman, but meaning unlike other churches that you've served where that has been so front and center as a primary crisis,
yes.
Does it almost remove it so that really
yes.
then you are just getting on with the work of being the pastor shepherd that you had said you want to be?
That's right. That's right. We have had no one is talking about it. Like no one is talking about whether or not this was okay, whether or not this was biblical, whether or not they could do a female lead pastor. There's not, it's not front and center like it has been before. It's just normal. And
wow.
I am getting to be me and pastor. And I mean, I wake up every day and I feel like I am made for this.
Right,
and I am
right.
getting to pastor as I would in my own skin, as a
yeah.
woman in my body, and as a mom, and nurture this church and lead this church forward without having to have exhausting conversations about a biblical framework for women in ministry.
So it's a season of tremendous liberation in all those ways.
Yes, tremendous
Amazing.
Liberation.
Yeah.
Yes, a thrill, a joy, yes.
So is that slightly disorienting, or does it just feel natural and it's fading even in your own mind as a sort of thing to be worried or concerned about?
It has been very disorienting, but in a good way.
Yeah.
So, Mark, when I want to say up until Easter Sunday. So Easter Sunday was my fourth Sunday here at Good Shepherd. And I have been keeping everything at an arm's length. My heart was so protected and guarded going into this. I was afraid to believe that this would go well. I was afraid to believe that people would embrace me. And so I came in here, you know, leading my best, pastoring as I know how, while still believing that this was going to still be hard. And I remember Easter Sunday going home and just like collapsing and weeping, crying, because I realized that it was okay. It was like God was saying to me, it's okay to be excited. It's okay to feel the joy. It's okay. It's okay to believe that this can go well, that this doesn't have to be the story that you thought that it would be. And the Spirit was just giving me permission to embrace the joy of this moment, of this season, and of the journey.
Amazing.
So the disorientation, it's been a holy disorientation.
Yes, yes, totally a holy disorientation.
I'm Mark Labberton. You're listening to Conversing.
Terabeth, for the sake of our listeners, I think it feels important to give them some idea of some of the challenges you've faced in the past so that they can understand the significance of what you've just been so beautifully describing, because it would just set the context a bit. Without overdwelling on that, I think it would be helpful if you could just quickly sketch what was it that you were responding to, which now makes this so radically different.
Yeah, so, you know, last time we were on this podcast, Mark, we reflected on my time in Pasadena.
Right.
And it was, you know, I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for the seat at the table that I got there. I would do it all over again. And the church is a church that has been a blessing to me even today. People that I'm still in relationship with. And it was very controversial for many within the congregation that I was stepping into this role. And even before I started, the controversy began to swirl in a very public way through Facebook postings and through discussion boards. And even within the congregation, it was becoming divisive. Significant members, the day that they presented my name, people left the day they presented my name because they said, if this is what our church stands for, then we can't even be here. And they didn't even want to see it out. So they left when they presented my name, and they left after the vote, and they left after my first week. So in total, roughly 600 people left the church within that window of my name being presented in my second Sunday. And many in the congregation described it as though it felt like the bottom dropped out of the place. And it was painful.
Well, I think just even that much description sets the stage. Some of our listeners are in churches where such a thing would be imaginable, the mm-hmm. same kind of dissent and division. And many of our listeners would not. But I think it's extremely important to underscore how real that kind of opposition to women in ministry, women as pastors, women as primary leads, women as preachers, all of that is still a very, very controversial thing for yes. some congregations. And yes. what you've experienced in a way is the yin and the yang of these two positions. On the one hand, you can take the position that was so divisive and full of very painful experiences, both for you and for plenty of people in the congregation. And at the same time, now you're in a context of the exact opposite, where mm-hmm. it's a non-issue and where you're free
right.
and liberated to be who you are and to simply get on with the work.
Right.
And I just want to pause and say to the listeners that any of you who are women who are facing the first experience that that Tara Beth is referring to when she was in Pasadena and now this contrasting experience, I hope are taking heart in the fact that both things are real and present. But there, it's not only one scenario or the other scenario. It's really yeah. both. And yeah. so you and I have talked about maybe periodically checking in, especially in this first year or two, as the first woman leader in this church. All is well at this moment. We're hearing a tremendous degree of freedom, which I actually expect will continue. So I don't say this next part skeptically. But the story is yet to be written about how this continues yeah. to unfold, right?
Yes.
So it'll be very interesting to just hear how this goes. And if in fact it surprises you and comes back as an issue, which based on what you've said, I would find doubtful.
Yeah.
And then it will be, what does it mean for you to be really free then to just give yourself to the work when so much of the work has been the gender issue, your gender
right.
issue or
right.
their gender
right.
issue. Tara Beth, as you think about the pastoral challenges then, as we think about what's before you, given that this is not on the table, what seems primary to you?
Yeah, so primary right now for me is nurturing this church towards health and healing.
From the gap that they had, that difficulty with the
that's
transition.
That's right. Yeah. I think there's a lot of things that still need reconciling and healing.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of, in particular within the staff, it created just a lot of disorientation for the staff within that gap. And so, you know, primarily, like right now, we're working on a lot of staff culture things. And reflecting as a staff the kind of values that we want to have. One of the things that we keep returning to is I keep saying to the staff, if we were a staffer, the kingdom of God is fully here, the kingdom of God in our staff as it is in heaven, what would that look like? And where are we now? And where is God calling us to go to embody yes. that? Yes. Because then we believe that that then will, of course, that's going to, you know, culture trickles. And so it's really, really important for me that the team that I'm working with and that my colleagues and the staff here are embodying the ways of the kingdom in the offices, in the hallways, and in the corners. And then, you know, within the congregation, it's been a lot of meeting with folks, listening to them, hearing some of their pain points that they've experienced over the last couple of years and holding that space for them. But then, you know, in addition to that, there's a lot of really fun stuff, too, that we're getting to do, you know, building out our engagement and discipleship pathway, which is, you know, building out our first impressions and connections ministry. And one of the things that I have been telling the staff and the church is this engagement pathway is about creating pipelines and pathways for our people to live out their call as sent ones, yes. To live out their call on mission in their neighborhoods. And this church is a church that has done a really amazing job of pulling off great things in the building. Great nice. Things. Like we can throw, like we can do a great worship service. There's been good preaching here through the years. There's great programs. And they do have mission partners. They do a lot of good work. But one of the things I'm saying to the congregation is that, okay, so how do we live out this call of sent ones? How do we as congregants take our addresses as seriously as Jesus took his? Jesus took his location seriously. Jesus moved into the neighborhood, and this idea of missional incarnational ministry. And so working with our staff, having a lot of fun collaborating the type of mechanisms, pathways, pipelines, however you want to put it, to help our people live that out and to be equipped and edified. And so this coming Sunday, in fact, is our annual meeting. Which, by the way, it's kind of wild having an annual meeting like 6 weeks in and writing an annual report 6 weeks in. But at the same time, it's exciting because I get to share just some of those early ideas of our vision as yes. a church. And I invite them to dream the possibilities that God has for us, to dream the dreams that God is dreaming for us, to imagine the things that God is imagining for us. And so while, you know, it's not going to be a baked vision, we can talk about some of the ingredients that I think God is stirring up and cooking up here.
Right. Tara Beth, one of the things that I'm struck by is that in the 2.5 year gap you had between your time in Pasadena and now your time at Good Shepherd, you had the privilege of being on the staff with Dan Meyer at Christ Church yep. Oakbrook. Mm-hmm. But you also had the trauma and sadness and pain of your father's passing mm-hmm. and of your mom facing some very serious medical conditions herself. And you have the healing that you yourself needed to go to. So your ability to move in freshly does not seem to be being struck by all of the baggage of such painful yes. experiences that you had in Pasadena. I think all of us know that we carry baggage from one experience to the mm-hmm. next. And mm-hmm. and some of that is good baggage and some of that's not good baggage. So yep. I'm curious, as you're just starting, how do you find the baggage of the past accompanying you or not accompanying you? Is it
yes.
in terms of your own inner orientation, instincts, perhaps inhibitions or fears or whatever. How is that going? And what do you think you've learned about that process of both learning from and purging the past?
I love that question so much. Well, first of all, just back to how you frame this up, I could not do this had I not had that 2.5 year gap.
Right.
I have said for a long time that when I think of the type of pastor that I want to be, it looks a lot like Dan Meyer. And Dan Meyer has been a massive influence in my life and incredibly formative for how I think about shepherding and pastoring.
Yes. And just for our listeners' sake, just let me pause for a moment and say Dan Meyer is the pastor of Christ Church Oak Brook, as Tara Beth referred to earlier. He's been serving at Christ Church for, I think it's about 25 years.
Yes.
And he has done this extraordinary job in a congregation that has tremendous size and reach and capacity. But it really, he really is, I think, for me too, an exemplary pastor in so many significant ways. And you'd been on the staff before, and then you came back for this 2.5 year period. So go on now and describe a bit more about what you were saying.
Yeah. So Dan is an incredibly, first of all, it's kind of, every time I'm around him, I feel like I need a dictionary, you know, because he just always has a new word. But to say that he is so thoughtful. He is so reflective and such incredibly like robust theological underpinnings behind what he does. Like nothing is ever without a theological framework. The guy writes a white paper for everything. And what I loved about that is what that taught me was that any decision, anything he did wasn't without a lot of reflection, without a lot of theological reflection and application and prayer and discernment. And what also I learned from him was Dan is the master of differentiation. And I would say that years ago, probably in Pasadena, I was the master of enmeshment with my emotions. And meaning, like, and so for our listeners, you know, this is, I'm kind of getting into some Steve Cuss language, Managing Leadership Anxiety, incredible book. And though I know he's not the creator of these ideas, but, you know, one of the things he talks about is in times of stress, when we're around like big emotions, he said, we're either going to respond enmeshed or detached often. And an enmeshment would mean that we're internalizing all the emotions in the room, and the people that we are with who are also stressed, and it's bleeding out, right? Like in really unhealthy ways.
Yes.
And, or we're going to be detached where we're unable to show any empathy and engagement.
Yes.
In Pasadena, some of the reflection that I've done over the last 2.5 years is I did a lot of bleeding out, Mark. I think that I was working my pain out in real time, sometimes in the pulpit. I was working my pain out sometimes in real time in my writing and my tweeting. And I believe that God sat me down the last 2.5 years and to watch and to learn and to listen and to work through my pain and to heal from my pain. And I would often watch Dan in stressful situations and just see how differentiated he is. By the way, so this idea of differentiation is where we're able to be present in the moment during anxious times while showing empathy and showing care and showing compassion, but there's a strength in that.
Yes.
And God has been developing that muscle in me over the last 2.5 years. And I think one of the reasons why pastors burn out is because they're incredibly enmeshed with the emotions and the pulse of the congregation. It's not sustainable. It's not sustainable because, you know, you're here, right now you're hearing me talk about how well things are going at Good Shepherd, but we're in the honeymoon phase. You know, and Mark Quanstra, my podcast partner for the Pastor's Table, said to me, he said, sometimes couples are always in a honeymoon. Maybe you'll always be in a honeymoon at Good Shepherd. And I said, yeah, maybe. I doubt it. But so, you know, over these last 2.5 years, I think God has readied me to come into this with a sense of reflection that everything, all the pain that we endured in Pasadena, wasn't that I was just receiving all these arrows and I was just a total victim. God has reflected me on the ways that God has been teaching me on the ways that I was also bleeding out and it was impacting my pastoring and my leadership. And so coming into this, I have a lot more grounding of a sense of who I am today, who I am as a pastor. And, you know, one of the things my therapist often says is when I start to replay the tapes of what might happen is she'll say, okay, let's talk about why this is not Pasnaz, or why this isn't that, and why this is different. What's different about this? And then we'll go through the list, and that reorients me and grounds me back into reality.
Right. Well, I think what you're getting at is so important. Fuller has been given a gift to develop a program for emotional health for the formation mm-hmm. of our students mm-hmm. and beyond. And that emotional health, to do the kind of differentiating work rather than the enmeshment work or the detachment work, is really significant, Tara Beth. And mm-hmm. and I'm just very glad. It explains a lot about the work that you've been doing psychologically and emotionally, but also your personal sense of responsibility for acknowledging what you were being given, even amidst the pain, as well as then the time to actually take an assessment of that, process it, reprocess it, reprocess it, until it actually becomes a good fruit that you can then bring to this new position at Good Shepherd.
Yeah. 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 And I, you know, just even becoming aware of my emotions. I probably thought I was really emotionally intelligent 10 years ago. But I think God knew that I had a long ways to go in being able to name my emotions, name the, as Steve Carter often says, the thing beneath the thing, you know, what's really going on, and being aware of how that might be bleeding out as a leader. And so just the work of therapy over the last 8 years has been profoundly formative for me. And being aware even just of triggers, triggers from past traumas that I was projecting into the present and was reacting and acting that out. And so I feel like more ready for this than ever. And I know that God is going to continue to grow me, continue to throw up mirrors and help me grow in self-awareness. But man, I hope I do that until through every quarter of life.
Right. So Tara Beth, you mentioned earlier that though there hadn't been a senior pastor who was a woman before, there were lots of female preachers at Good Shepherd. What has been their response to now having a woman as the primary preacher at Good Shepherd, when they've been given, does it displace them in some way? Does it disturb that pattern because they now have a woman senior pastor? Will women end up preaching less apart from you, that is?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. And that's something we're wrestling through because this is a church that's always had a preaching and teaching team. And so I want to continue to empower the women on our staff. We have a few women in seminary right now, and they are where I was all those years ago. And right. So I feel a responsibility to continue to develop and embolden and empower all the preachers on our staff.
Yes.
And so right now I am preaching every week, but right after Pentecost, we're going to start reintroducing our preaching team.
Yes,
And so I hope not. I hope that all of our preachers on staff continue to feel empowered and emboldened and developed, because
right.
I wouldn't be here if pastors had not done that for me.
Right, right. Amen. Yeah, I've had the same experience of being invited into spaces far earlier than I would have ever imagined. And the opportunity and significance of that shaped the rest of my life. Very parallel, yeah. Honestly, to what you're describing. And I do think that the willingness of any generation to invite younger people as far in and as deeply in as mm-hmm. as possible is really significant. And it is part of what builds the depth of formation that then can stand the longer haul. If mm-hmm. suddenly that hasn't really happened, you then get thrown into a senior position without that depth of experience. It's really significant. I was talking just recently to somebody who's preaching I greatly admire. He's not someone that I have known. And I was trying to express to him the depth that I feel when I hear him preach. And then he began to tell me the stories of the people that had helped form him. And of course, it suddenly began to make sense that in light of all of that, that he would now be the person that he is. So Sarah Beth, this has been such a great chance to just get started with you at the beginning of your time as the shepherd of Good Shepherd. And I am really, really honored and thankful for you and for the work that you've done, both in Pasadena and in the interim and now at Good Shepherd. And I think it's going to be very exciting and wonderful to see how this unfolds. And we will check back in periodically to just get an update. How is this story unfolding? How are the challenges different, the same? What's unfolding? Because I think at a time when the church is facing so many challenges and where there's so many people who feel disconnected from church, to understand the process of leadership right now, especially women's leadership, to me feels particularly wonderful and joyful in your case, even as I know in the larger landscape, it's often extremely hard and challenging. Mm-hmm. So God bless you, and thank you so much for this conversation today.
Thank you, Mark, for having me, and God bless you.
Thank you for listening. Subscribe to Conversing on your favorite podcast app to listen to new episodes as they are released. And please, leave a review. Conversing is produced by Peter Laverton and distributed by Fuller Studios.